Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Failed Critics Star Wars Rogue One special. I'm Steve Norman. I'm joined by Paul Field.
Evening, fellas.
Nearly forgot your name there.
Have you?
I just think it's how tired we all are after going to the midnight showing.
I am exhausted, but go on. We're going to fight through this.
And Chris Packett Dave, who comes back for his now annual appearance on a Star Wars special.
Evening, gents. Thank you for having me back.
It's a pleasure, because the last year, the Force Awakens podcast was, I think, the most listened to ever Failed Critics podcast.
Basically, any podcast that doesn't have Owen on it tends to do really well.
It's probably the most I've spoken on any one podcast.
It is. In fact, somebody's analysed, and you spoke more on that than you did in every other podcast for the entire year.
Well, there you go. But yes, with this, so at the end, we'll obviously review Star Wars Rogue One. Or is it Rogue One, A Star Wars Story?
Well, I think it's just called Rogue One, officially. Like, if you go on IMDb, like, the official title is just Rogue One.
But we'll be talking about that, and as it's the first movie Star Wars spin-off from the Skywalker storyline, we'll be talking about all the other Star Wars spin-offs we've had, from books to comics to TV shows and cartoons and whatever else. And we'll also do a spoiler-free review and a spoiler review, as it probably warrants a review full of spoilers, as well as one that doesn't have any in.
Chewbacca's a woman.
Darth Vader's Luke Skywalker's father.
Should we do the quiz, Steve?
Yeah, we'll start off with a quiz like we do on every podcast. But there's no bad film for the loser to watch. It's just for pride.
Oh, no. There's a bad film for the loser to watch. Don't you worry about that. That's set in stone.
Is it Caravan of Courage?
It could be. Mm. Okay, so this is a real simple quiz, guys. So it's Dave versus Steve for the honour of watching something truly, truly awful. And it's a straight up questions, answers. If you don't know the answer, I'll pass it over to the other person to get a point. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay, Steve. Which is the only film of the original six in which the desert planet of Tatooine doesn't appear?
Empire Strikes Back.
Point for Steve. Well done. This is for you, Dave. Which 1981 blockbuster features characters from the original trilogy carved onto an ancient wall?
Oh, that's Raiders of the Lost Ark.
It is. Well done, Chris Packett Dave.
Thank you.
Steve, easy. What's the name of the green-skinned bounty hunter that Han Solo kills in the Mos Eisley Cantina?
Greedo.
Correct. They are going to get progressively more difficult.
I should hope so.
Dave, who kills Jabba the Hutt?
Leia. Strangles him.
She does indeed. Well done.
Well, she was kind of dressed as a dominatrix, wasn't she?
She was dressed as a dominatrix. Yeah. Anyone here got any experience with dominatrixes? No. What's the plural of dominatrix, Dave?
A damn good evening. shall we move on?
Yes. Steve.
Yes.
Which of the original trilogy films has the most deaths?
Most deaths? How many people on the first Death Star and the second? I reckon A New Hope, because the second Death Star wasn't fully built when it got blown up, and the first one was.
All those contractors.
Yeah, but there's more people on it. Once it's fully operational, it's full. When it's half built, it's half full.
Yeah, you're correct, though. It's a point.
Crucially, Alderaan.
Well, yeah, that as well. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yes, of course, blows up a whole planet, yes.
Yeah.
Dave,
yeah.
Which character does Ewan McGregor's uncle, Dennis Lawson, play in the original trilogy?
Oh, is it Wedge?
Oh, it is, Dave. Well done. Cool, everyone's got them right so far. Steve?
Yes.
Which is the only film of the original six to be nominated for Best Picture? And what beat it for a bonus point?
I'd imagine it would be Empire Strikes Back. What beat it? Rocky?
No. Dave, I'm going to pass it over.
Star Wars, 1977.
Yeah.
And was it Annie Hall?
It was. Well done. 2 points, Dave, there. And this is your question next. They are going to get tricky now. Which prop ended up nicknamed the Pork Burger by the special effects crew?
I'm going to guess the Jabba the Hutt puppet.
No. Steve?
Was it the Death Star?
No, it was the Millennium Falcon.
It's like, shaped like a chop. That makes sense.
So, Steve, what does the term Blue Harvest mean in context of the original trilogy?
It was the working title of A New Hope.
Oh, that's not correct. Dave, do you want to steal it?
Was it the shooting title of Jedi?
It was indeed.
Because didn't they knew that if the location owners would know it was a Star Wars film, they'd really ramp up the cost for shooting there or something like that.
Yep. Dave, what was Luke Skywalker's original surname?
Was it something like Darklighter?
No. Steve, do you want to steal it?
Yeah, Starkiller.
Well done, Steve.
I think Biggs' surname was Darklighter.
Yes.
Okay, this is a kind of process of elimination here, but I will give you the answers at the end. This is the opening lines round. So, Steve, do you want to go first or second?
I'll go first.
Okay. Command station. This is ST-321. Code clearance blue.
That, I reckon, could be Phantom Menace.
Okay. Dave?
Yep.
Senator, we're making our final approach into Coruscant.
Oh, that's Phantom Menace.
Okay. Steve?
Yeah.
Captain?
Is that it?
That's it.
Captain. Oh, I reckon it's Empire Strikes Back.
Dave,
yeah.
Lock onto him, R2.
I've got the same mental block. I can't remember now how any of them begin.
I think I know this one.
Lock onto him, R2. Is that Empire?
Okay. Steve?
Yeah.
Echo 3 to Echo 7. Han, old buddy, do you read me?
Oh, no, that's Empire, isn't it? I've got the other one wrong.
Okay, and then Dave?
Yeah.
Did you hear that? They shut down the main reactor.
Now, that one is Star Wars, A New Hope.
Well, I'll put you out of your misery.
Collective
please.
Misery.
Yes. Yeah. Command station, this is ST-321, Coherence Blue. That was actually Return of the Jedi. So, Steve, you got that wrong.
Where did they start on that?
It starts with Command station, this is ST-321, Coherence Blue.
Isn't Darth flies towards the Death Star?
Yeah, isn't he in a shuttle?
Yeah.
The next one, Senator, we're making our final approach to Coruscant. That's Attack of the Clones.
I've got my one wrong. I got my Naboo mixed up with Coruscant.
Yep. Captain was actually the Phantom Menace, Steve. Lock onto him, R2. Dave,
that was Revenge of the Sith.
That was Revenge of the Sith, yep. And then Echo 3 to Echo 7, Han, old buddy, do you read me? You got that right, Steve. It was The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
And did you hear that they shut down the main reactor? Dave, you got that right. That was A New Hope. So, Steve, next question is yours.
Cool.
What does Han Solo claim the Millennium Falcon can do in less than 12 parsecs?
Kessel Run.
There you go. Nice and easy one.
Very easy.
Dave, which actor made lightsaber sounds when he was dueling, which had to be removed in post-production?
Ewan McGregor?
It's correct. Well done. Okay, Steve, there's four questions in this round, and it's called, which characters did these actors almost play? So, Steve, Benicio Del Toro, who did he almost play?
Well, because he's been cast in Episode 8, hasn't he?
Oh, okay, but maybe. Do you know what? I don't know. But who did he almost play in the past?
I don't think it would have been Han Solo. I really don't know, because I wouldn't have thought he'd been knocking about sort of when the original trilogy was. Was he almost Qui-Gon Jinn?
No. Dave, do you want to have a go?
Was he Darth Maul?
It was indeed Darth Maul.
Dave, that makes no sense.
No, I was like, Dave, your question. Who was Christopher Walken almost cast as?
Oh, now that probably would have been original trilogy. Was he nearly Han Solo?
He was nearly Han Solo.
Wow, that would have been a different kind of film.
It would have been. Steve.
Yeah.
Who was Gary Oldman almost cast as?
Was he nearly... See, it's difficult to think of the older ones, because they could have been the young actor in the original trilogy or an older guy in the prequel trilogy, whereas if they were just the young...
This was from the prequel, so I'll give you a clue.
Gary Oldman, who was... Was he nearly Qui-Gon Jinn?
No.
No.
Dave, do you want to guess?
I'll get that right in a minute.
I think I remember this being announced. Was he General General Grievous.
He was nearly General Grievous, yes. And Dave, last one. Who was nearly cast to play Jar Jar Binks?
Who was near? Oh, that could have been anyone. I have either Dolph Lundgren.
No.
I've no idea.
I've switched it because it's too easy. I thought everyone would know this, so I tried to switch it around a bit. Steve, who was nearly cast as Jar Jar Binks?
Snoop Dogg.
No, it was Michael Jackson.
No.
Oh, dear. Okay, Dave.
Yes.
Back to normal questions. What planet do Wookiees come from?
Oh, God, I can never pronounce it, but it's got a K and a Y in it. It's like Kachuk or something like that.
That's a lot of things with KY in it, Dave.
Kachuk.
I'll if Steve can do a better job than that, I'll give it to Steve.
Isn't it Kashyyyk?
Yeah, well done, Steve. Steve, your question. What grooming product was sprayed silver to make Key John's communicator?
Was it a razor?
It was a razor. Oh, dear.
Like in his little holder thing, probably.
Okay, we're nearly the end there. Dave, what does Luke's uncle Owen do as a job?
Oh, he's some sort of farmer, isn't he?
But what sort of farmer is he?
Some sort of spice farmer. I can't remember.
No, Steve?
Moisture.
Yes, well done. Steve, your question. How many characters' hands does Anakin or Darth cut off? And can you name them?
Luke Skywalker's hand.
Yep.
He cuts off the hands of... I think it's just one.
No. Dave, I'll pass it over.
He cuts off both of Christopher Lee's hands. Dooku's.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Oh, yeah.
But, I can't remember anyone else's.
I'll put you in mystery. There was one more. It's Mace Windu.
Yeah.
Right. Name the 13 characters. And you can. This is the last question. Name the 13 characters who appear in both Revenge of the Sith and the original trilogy. You can take it in turns and you can get a point for each.
Revenge of the Sith and the original trilogy.
Yep.
Right. Okay. It's Luke Skywalker.
Okay. Right. Let me cross that out and a point for Steve. Dave?
Okay, well, by default, I'll go Princess Leia.
Point for Dave. Steve?
Obi Kenobi.
Correct. Dave?
The Emperor.
Palpatine. Correct. Yeah. Yep.
Yoda.
Yoda. Correct. Dave?
Darth Vader.
Yep. Cool, you're doing well on this, Steve.
R2-D2.
Correct, Steve. Dave?
C-3PO. Sorry.
Now it's going to get difficult, isn't it?
I don't know. I've got a couple up my sleeve.
Okay.
Chewbacca.
Correct.
How many have you got left?
Four. I think it's slightly disingenuous way that it says when it says the original trilogy, it doesn't mean all of the original trilogy.
I know. Moff Tarkin is right at the end of Sith, isn't he?
Yep, there you go, Dave. Point. Yeah. Steve, three more to get.
Now it gets more difficult, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I'll
have to hurry you.
Oh, no, he's not alive, isn't it, is he?
Okay, I'm going to pass it across. Dave, you can have another guess.
No, I can't think of any more.
Okay.
Yeah, give us some more time.
Go on, then. You can have some time.
Cool, I can edit this out. I can edit out time. I am God. I can edit out time.
To make
you
look like a genius.
Yeah, I can edit out time. I am God. Boba Fett.
No.
Yeah, he was in. Was he not in Revenge of Sith? Is he?
No. Shall I put you out of your misery?
He was in Revenge of the Sith.
No.
Not on this list, he's not. Like,
oh, no,
it could
be Attack
Paul...
of the Clones, wasn't it?
Yeah. The three you're missing are Mon Mothma.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru.
Oh, of course.
I had them in my mind earlier as well and then blanked.
So scores on the doors for the Star Wars quiz. Steve, 17 points. Dave, 19 points. So well done, Dave. Close in the end. But to be fair, you both did really well because some of those questions were quite tricky.
Realistically, I had to lose that because Dave comes on this podcast once a year. So we haven't waited a year for him to review whatever he made it watch.
That's a really good point.
Nice one. Oh, well done, Paul. That was a good quiz.
So, with Rogue One being the first spin-off movie in the Star Wars universe, as Disney kind of looked to do what they're doing with Marvel with Star Wars, we thought we'd take a bit of the podcast to talk about the various Star Wars spin-offs there have been in various guises. We're going to go through a list that we found on Metro's website, but before that, there was this whole... Barely any of it's canon anymore, is it? It's all, since Disney bought it, the only things that are canon are the 8 movies now, the Clone Wars TV series, the Rebels TV series, and the books and comics that have been released since Disney took it over. So all this expanded universe of comics and books, of which there was a lot, now means nothing.
Yeah, I've got loads of books, and I bought loads for Leo as well. Literally, shelves next door are absolutely stacked. And yeah. I've read most of them, but yeah,
some of them are absolute pony.
Yeah,
some of them are really good, and they've taken parts of it. So we'll come on to Star Wars Rebels later, but one of the most popular trilogy books was about somebody who basically took over the Empire after the deaths of the Emperor and Vader, called Thrawn, and they've now, even though when the expanded universe got non-canon when Disney took it over, they've now introduced him into Rebels as a character. But the games, there's the Knights of the Old Republic game, are really popular. They're kind of like Star Wars version of Warcraft, I think. But it's not something that interests me. And then there was the Force Unleashed games, were actually pretty good console games. X-Wing versus TIE Fighter, that was good.
You have to go way back for me for games.
Shadows of the Empire on the N64, that was a good one.
Keep going back. I used to sit in a cabinet and
a cabinet?
Yeah, a cabinet game. In an actual amusement arcade, you'd sit in this cabinet.
Oh, and, I think I know the one you're talking about. Is it the one where you do...
Fly an X-Wing.
Yeah.
You go down the you attack the Death Star in that channel, and you'd have the samples. You go, you're all clear, kid. It was awesome.
There was one as well, because I'm a bit younger than you, Paul, considerably, because you're well old.
Yep.
The one I had, like, you do lightsaber battles in between. So you do a battle from, you do the first Death Star, then you do a lightsaber battle with Darth Vader, then you do Battle of Hoth, and then you do a ground mission on Hoth, and then you do a lightsaber battle with Boba Fett for some reason, then you do Endor, and then the second Death Star, and it was brilliant.
Did you ever play any of these games, Dave?
No, same as you. I go pretty far back. I've never played a Star Wars game in the modern era, but I had one called Jedi Arena on the Atari 2600, which was just a bit like Pong, really. It was just like, it used a paddle, and it was a strange game, like two lightsabers. And I also played a version of Empire Strikes Back, which I think was like a version of Attack of the Mutant Camels.
Oh, do you know what? I remember this.
Yeah.
I remember going to Debenhams, who had a display model of the Atari 2600, and they had Empire Strikes Back, and it was a bit like Defender.
That's it. So it's a side-scroller, and you just blow up the AT-ATs as they walk towards you.
Yeah, terrible.
Yeah, that was it. But that's my gaming experience. I've never read any of the spin-off books. I used to have the very good encyclopedia, which was all I needed, really, because I thought, I don't need to read the novels, I've just got the encyclopedia that gives you a bit of history of each of the characters. There's Wikipedia online, which is quite good, but presumably
all
that's...
brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a good, really good resource. But there was one book I remember as a kid, Splinter of the Mind's Eye, which was, I think, the very first non... It was the first book that wasn't a film.
Yeah, I don't remember it.
But no, it's never really been my bag, like expanded universe stuff.
Anyway, we'll get onto the list then from the Metro's website. The first one is Star Wars Holiday Special.
Dave's seen this, and I've seen most of it.
Is going back to the Wookiee, Chewbacca's home planet and meeting his family.
It's horrifying. That first 15 minutes when it's just the Wookiees talking, it's like a fever dream. It's grotesque. And I started watching it. I've seen it in its entirety, but I had a bit of time last night before the film, and I started watching it, and I had to turn it off. It was unsettling. It's not good. And I know it's famously bad, the Star Wars Holiday Special, but it's bad because it's meant to be bad because it's cheesy or corny, or it kind of spoils the characters. For me, it's just unwatchably horrible.
It is not good. Celebrity interludes as well, and the like this story of Han and Chewie trying to get back to. It's called Life Day, isn't it? They don't call it Christmas. He has to get back. Chewie has to get back for Life Day, and it's just Chewie's wife and kid in this treehouse, just making Wookiee noises. It's just horrendous.
Gross. And Jefferson Airplane turn up in it. It's a really weird. And Bea Arthur from Golden Girls.
Yeah.
Such a strange mix. But it was 78, so it was.
No, it was. Was it? Oh, yeah, it was, wasn't it? Yeah.
And then we had two Ewok films, Caravan of Courage, An Ewok Adventure, and Ewoks, The Battle for Endor, which also will cover a few bases in one go, which also led to the cartoon spin-off Ewoks, which lasted 35 episodes.
Well, I rewatched both of the Ewok films. They are not good. The weird thing is, in the States, I think they were TV films.
Yeah.
But I remember certainly Caravan of Courage in 1984 was given a theatrical release in the UK. It's low budget, poorly made, and very, very specifically aimed at children. But the weirdest thing about it is you've got these, like, it's about these two kids who are stranded on a planet. And they need to rescue their parents from this thing called the Gorax. The thing about the Ewoks is they don't speak English. And there's lots and lots of dialogue between the Ewoks. And you can see they're shooting and someone's gone, yeah, this isn't going to work, is it? Because kids won't read subtitles. So it has this terrible narration explaining all the time what is actually happening. It is just... The only good thing about us, I say, about at least the Ewok adventure, the first one, Caravan of Courage... They use practical effects, and they're actually, you know, half decent, apart from the animals, where they use real animals, which is just like horses, sort of ferrets and llamas. And the whole thing turns into like a mini Lord of the Rings, where they go on this adventure to rescue the parents. But the second one, The Battle for Endor, is bizarre. It's kind of a mixer of sort of Power Rangers sort of kitsch, Fraggle Rock, Zelda, people in Doctor Who costumes, and absolutely terrible, terrible CGI.
In 80s CGI?
Yeah.
Like Tron style.
Yeah, it's really bad. Like, you can see these CGI creatures, they're just superimposed in the frame, and it just looks cringe. Because at least the practical effects in the first one, you can give them some credit. And although they don't hold up well, it's still watchable. The second one... Although the puppets and stuff and the masks are really good, everything else going on around it, the CGI is absolutely atrocious. And you've got really kitsch baddies and people in stupid costumes. And it genuinely feels like an episode of the Power Rangers.
Which one had Wilford Brimley in? Because that's the one I do remember seeing out of the two of them.
That's the second one.
That one I did see then. I remember watching that.
That's Ewoks, The Battle for Endor.
And he's got like a Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
He's in a treehouse.
That's all I remember about it. But although I think I did have the pop-up book of the Battle of Endor.
But what leads you to give your kind of, you know, your intellectual property into these terrible spin-offs?
Doesn't make any sense.
Money in the bank.
But how's that money in the bank? Because they were
poorly done.
Just...
Anyway, on to the next one. And then we had an animated series, Star Wars Droids.
I don't remember this at all.
No, I don't remember. Well, it's before I was born, but I don't remember seeing it since. Then we move on to some slightly better stuff, Star Wars Clone Wars. Now, this takes up two entries in this list. Started back in 2003, ended up being like a proper traditional animated cartoon, and then moved on to a more CGI version. I think the CGI version was actually better, but the plot basically covered between the Clone Wars movie and Revenge of the Sith movie, and it's a lot of it shows Anakin and his fall to the dark side and how he's being manipulated a lot better than George Lucas could in the films. There are some poor episode. You get some episodes that focus on other Jedi as well, so you see what they're up to and a bit different stuff there. You have some episodes that just purely focused on the clone troopers and them as a team and things like that, which are quite good. Darth Maul comes back in it. He's actually pretty good as a villain. Anakin, as he becomes a Jedi Knight, takes on a Padawan, and she's a good character as well. Generally, it's a pretty enjoyable series.
I saw the Clone Wars movie.
Yeah.
Funnily enough, I went to the opening night of that and took Leo way, way back in 2008. And I think there were like six people in there, and four of them were in costume.
Christ.
And next one on this is Lego Star Wars, The Quest for R2-D2. Now, I've never heard of this.
I've not heard of this.
But it's just a video game. One of these Lego video games, there's quite a lot of those about.
Well, it's a film of the video game, isn't
it? Yeah. And then finally on that list is the most recent one, which is still running now, which is Star Wars Rebels, which is a direct continuation of Clone Wars in so much as it shares some of the characters that have come out of Clone Wars and gone into Rebels. So Anakin's apprentice appears in this now, on and off, as does some of the clone troopers. But it's about a Jedi, I think he's a Padawan at the time of Order 66, and he takes on his own apprentice, and it's about a group of rebels who try and foil the Empire. Darth Vader turns up in it. Darth Maul turns up in it, and it's again just it is very kiddie, but it is actually very good for what is a 20-minute kids cartoon every week. It's a lot of fun.
I've never seen them. I've struggled with all of the kind of animated Star Wars stuff. I'm just not. I think you've got to be really, really into it. It's just not for me. Have you watched any of them, Dave?
Same as you, Paul. No, I don't really like animation in that style. I'd be well up, and I know they have mentioned it, at some sort of live-action spin-off series. I'd be very intrigued by that. But no,
that's coming as Night Follows Day. Look, yeah, at Marvel. They're going to be cashing in on that all over the shop.
What the idea should be is Rogue Squadron done in a Band of Brothers style.
That would be awesome. I'd watch that.
There you go, I pitched it. Give me the money, Disney.
I'd watch a Mos Eisley Cantina spin-off, all the kind of characters and their spin-off stories. Like
The Sopranos.
Well, maybe not like that, but not quite Tales of the Unexpected. But you know, each episode opens in the cantina and focuses in on a person in there, and you see their kind of, you know, their story of how they got there and who they're about.
Yeah.
And anyway, should we move on to Rogue One itself?
Go on, Steve.
This was the first spin-off film, the first film that deviates away from the Skywalker storyline. And we all went to the midnight showing, or 5 past midnight showing, because we had to do this podcast, not because we're massive nerds.
Well,
we did this last time, but had to lose half your audience. As last year, I'm really keen to know, how were people's... Because this is, this is what they call like event cinema, isn't it? Going to the midnight thing.
Yeah.
How was it?
Packed.
Oh, really?
No one in fancy dress this time.
Right.
Every other time I've seen a Star Wars film at cinema on the release day. It's been a few over the years, but not always midnight release. Only this one and the last one. There's always been someone in fancy dress. And the same for superhero films. This one, none. But this was the first time other people have experienced this phenomenon before. People applauding at the end of a film.
Oh, yeah.
This is the only time I've had this happen to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Never before.
Well, Eastbourne was, as ever, shit. really frustrating going in there. And I'd almost forgotten how bad it was, because they've got these stupid house lights that they don't turn off. You could literally read a paper in there while you're watching the film. And one of them was right above my head at an angle that it was shining in my eyes. And then they have the emergency exit light, which is so bright, the light bleeds onto the screen and covers the bottom left-hand side of the screen, which makes it completely unwatchable, that part. But more than anything else, any dark scenes, I couldn't see. I was genuinely struggling to see what was actually on the screen. And I don't know if anyone else, what was your, could you actually see?
I think I'd done my local Cineworld out of money.
Right.
There's one, I used my unlimited card. But two, because I was going on my own, I didn't want to sit next to people.
Mm.
What I did was, when I booked the tickets, I found a row of three against the wall that was empty, and booked the middle one, because I thought there's not going to be many ones turning up, so there's a good chance I'll have no one either side of me.
We had a row to ourselves.
Brilliant.
I got to my
left. And they had two showings on the set at the same time.
Yeah.
Did you see it in 2D or 3D?
I went 2D.
I went 2D.
Well, I got there at midnight, and my local cinema just around the corner, and it was surprisingly low key. There wasn't the buzz and excitement that there was Force Awakens last year. Like, both of you guys, same, no fancy dress. And it was maybe 80% full, which I was really surprised at. I mean, yes, it is a late night screening, but like you say, it's an event. So I don't know, was it in general just not as hyped as The Force Awakens in general? I said to my mate at work, who's a science fiction fan, not specifically Star Wars, he's more into Trek, I said, oh, I'm off to see the new Star Wars film later. He went, oh yeah, what's that then? I was like, are you joking? I went, there's a new Star Wars film. It's set before Episode 4. And he's like, oh, no, I hadn't heard of that. How can that be? Am I imagining it? Or was it less hyped?
It was less hyped, yeah. Because we had a whole row to ourselves. There were less people than I was about. There wasn't a big buzz. I didn't have a bloke in a dressing gown trying to start a Mexican wave. Oh, well, we'll get on to this. I mean, we can address this now if you want, but it's marketed as a standalone spin-off, whatever you want to call it. But after watching it, I don't think it is.
Yeah.
I think this is episode 3.5.
Yeah, I know what you mean, because my thoughts were it's a strange mix of both fan stuff and non-fan stuff. Because if you're not a fan, if you've never seen the original trilogy, you're going to be on the edge of your seat. You're going to be thinking, are they going to get the plans? Are they going to successfully transmit them? But of course, if you've seen the films, if you haven't seen the films, everyone really knows what happens.
I'm guessing from what already been said then, we know that all three of us liked it a lot.
Oh, God, no. I didn't like it. No, no, no.
Really?
Well...
Steve stopped dead in his tracks.
Look, I didn't hate it, and it's better than the prequels, but I left feeling very empty, disappointed, let down. Yeah, I didn't particularly enjoy it.
Paul, what did you think?
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. Normally, if I know the outcome and I know what's going to happen in a film, I'm not a big fan. Hence, I've never even bothered to watch Titanic, just because, you know, fuck it, it sinks at the end. So for this to engage me, it was...
Whoa,
spoiler there for Titanic.
Oh, come on.
Bruce Willis is a guy. Yeah.
But that kind of...
That's really die-hard for people, isn't it?
But that kind of story where I know the outcome before I'm walking in has to be really good to engage me. I don't know why, it's just a personal thing. And yeah, this managed to do it really well. It was much darker than I expected. The only kind of comic relief coming from one place. But Steve, should we rewind a little bit? Just sort of set up the film and the premise?
Yeah, so the premise is, obviously, for Star Wars fans, they know that Episode 4, the first ever Star Wars, starts off with the Death Star plans having been stolen from the Empire, trying to be delivered to the Rebels so they can blow it up. And this film here, Rogue One, is the story of how they steal those plans. There's a bit more to it than that, but essentially that's what it is. It's how the fledgling rebellion stole the Death Star plans.
Yeah, pretty much. I have to kind of look past the fact that I couldn't see what the hell was going on half the time because of the like absolutely awful projection in there. But it called along upon a lot of kind of Star Wars tropes, a family on a kind of desolate planet and a kid, and then getting a team together and going on an adventure. The first third was strong. I think it struggled a little bit in the middle, but the final third I thought was amazing. Really, really well done.
Yeah.
And I'm not a fan of Gareth Edwards either.
He's only really done two films of any note, hasn't he, before this?
Who's handing out this kind of property to a bloke who's done two films?
He's done Monsters, which I actually liked.
Oh, I hated
it. I hated it.
And then he did Godzilla, which was very...
I'm not sure I've even seen that, because I didn't like, I hated Monsters so much.
The thing is with that, it was a really honourable effort, because it was essentially like a DIY movie, wasn't it? He did it all on his own, very low budget, creative, but it was so boring. And those two lead actors had no chemistry whatsoever. But he's clearly talented, Gareth Edwards. He's clearly got a good eye.
Yeah.
Most people I meet seem to really like Monsters, so I'm glad that you agree with me on that, Paul. But yeah, it was... bold, but then yeah, I think I quite like Godzilla. It had its problems, but it was difficult to reboot that kind of film, I think. But again, going back to the sort of the dark nature of Rogue One, I mean, visually dark, Godzilla had exactly the same issue. I couldn't really tell what was going on during a lot of the monster fights.
Yeah,
it was just so dark.
Yeah,
and Paul and I both said that when we got back, having seen the whole of Rogue One, we watched the trailer, and the trailers are so much brighter.
Yeah, it's true. I watched the trailer again tonight in HD, and oh my God, what a difference. It's so bright and clear, and it looked amazing. And I thought back to what I was looking at last night. It was not good.
Right. I mean, some of the settings were stunning for it. I mean, the planets had stupid names, like really stupid names.
And also, did you notice for the first time ever they had title cards for the names of the planets? Never been done in a Star Wars film.
Oh, yeah, I'd noticed
that before. I don't know whether that's Disney's interference, sort of, you know, saying that audiences aren't going to get that, that they're not going to understand what this planet is.
But, well, I think it's, yeah, I think it was a good idea, because a lot of those names, places, you know, like Yavin and stuff, I know that Luke sets up his Jedi training base on one of the moons of Yavin in the books, and so they meant something to me, those names, and they were probably a little bit of fan service there without most people even realising.
The planets in Star Wars, if you go to a planet for a first time in a film in Star Wars, it tends to be you see that planet from space first.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that happened all the time in this one. Every time you went there for the first time, see it from space.
Yeah.
Should we have a little run through the characters here? Who was doing what?
Well, there was only really two main characters. Everyone else was very much secondary. And whether they're I don't think they're underused, but they didn't do a lot. They did in terms of involvement in the plot of stealing the plans, but they didn't actually have a lot of character development or anything like that. So you had Jyn Erso, who was the main female lead, played by Felicity Jones, and she was this kind of criminal that's hired by or taken on by the Rebel Alliance because her dad is the guy who is designing the laser for the Death Star very much against his will. So they get her in. I thought she was fantastic.
Yep, I thought she was really good. Yeah.
I saw her recently in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, which she wasn't that good in, I don't think, even though that film was okay. I don't think she was that great in that, but she was really good in this. She had to carry the film. That was the purpose of her character, and she did it excellently. You know, she delivered her dialogue convincingly. She done the action scenes well. She was very much like Star Wars has always kind of had the female heroine front and center, and she did them all justice.
I thought the guy alongside her, is it Diego Luna? He plays Cassian. Yeah. He wasn't very charismatic. I thought.
No,
but like I said, the all these secondary characters.
He was kind of up there with her.
He was meant to be the male lead, but he didn't seem to do much on screen. There wasn't much character development on him. You didn't find out much about him. He was just he's the, like the person in charge, but really second in charge. That was about it.
I thought
really.
The supporting cast outshone him across the board, and specifically Donnie Yen and Riz Ahmed, I thought were excellent.
Yeah, they were very good. And then the other main character was Krennic, played by Ben Mendelsohn.
Yeah.
He was very good. I've not seen him in anything else before, but he was very good. Now, he was charismatic.
I mentioned this in kind of my written review, that he was quite good at being intimidating to his enemies or people beneath him, but being very intimidated by those above him.
Yes.
So there's no secret Vader's in it, because Vader's in the trailer. He was very... Well, you would be, wouldn't you? But, you know, when he's confronted by Vader, he's very intimidated. But when he's talking down to someone, he's very intimidating, but he has got like that charisma that you kind of need, bad guy.
I wasn't that taken with him. And I know it's going to sound weird, but it was mainly due to it looked like his outfit. Because obviously that's because it's Disney. That's put him in a different coloured suit to everyone else, so you could see he was one of the main characters. It looked like a fan had made that to go to Comic-Con. It just didn't seem right. I don't know what it was. It kept pulling me out of the film.
I actually liked what he was wearing, because it really harked back to the kind of things that bad guys wore in 1977. And it wasn't just him wearing as well. Like some of the Rebel Alliance, they cast these actors with like 70s style moustaches. And
maybe I was thinking of it as in terms of modern day. Maybe they were trying to hark back to the original, and that costume did fit in. But it just seemed jarring to me.
No,
Ye gods, what Amisa saying? I agree with Dave that a lot of the Rebel Alliance characters who are kind of in a more of a leadership role tend to have very World War II British movie moustaches.
Yeah.
They were like the people who escaped a victory who were telling them they shouldn't be playing the match or whatever. The ones trying to organise Hatch's escape. They were very much that kind of thing. But it worked.
What did we think about seeing Kung Fu then in a Star Wars film?
I didn't like it. You two seem to like Donnie Yen. I didn't think he was good in the slightest.
It was different though, wasn't it? It was something new to the Star Wars universe, seeing a bloke.
But we've had Kung Fu to a degree with like Sith lightsaber fights, particularly in the prequels. Not so much Kung Fu, but you know what I mean? Like flips and kicks and that kind of thing. But I've never really liked that whole idea of a blind martial artist. I never liked. Did you ever see the Rutger Hauer film where he was a blind martial artist?
I think I have actually.
And what's the other one? The there's obviously the Book of Eli, but yeah. There's Zatoichi. Zatoichi, you've seen that?
No.
That's about a blind martial artist, and it just it doesn't work for me. But I didn't find him funny either, Donnie Yen. Even when they put the bag on his head, and he goes,
"I'm blind."
What, doing that, I'm blind. No, I did.
There wasn't a lot of comic relief in this, though, was there? Pretty much all of the comic relief fell to. Doesn't roll off the tongue, does it? K2SO.
K2SO, yeah.
But he was good, though.
He was good.
He was very good.
Yeah. Beautifully dry, acerbic, blunt, and being British, I love that.
It's brilliant, and it gave it.
It was the only comic relief, though, wasn't it?
It's a darker and grittier film than probably any other Star Wars film. Empire's obviously the darkest one, but I think this is, you know, a bit, maybe not darker, but grittier than that. It's a bit more grounded. There's barely any force use in it, and we'll come on to that in the spoiler alert. But you know, there's relatively no force use in it, so there's none of the kind of magical element that comes with other Star Wars films. It's just grounded in as much reality as you can with sci-fi and space.
I want to talk about the not spoilery, but the space battle at the end. What did we think?
Oh, that was great.
Yeah, that I enjoyed. Like I didn't enjoy the first two acts, but yeah, that final act, yeah, it was impressive. It did remind me a little bit of Spaceballs with the shield.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, it was good. X-Wings and TIE Fighters.
It was a classic callback, though, again, wasn't it? We need to get that shield down. I'm trying to think, how many Star Wars films actually involve having to get a shield down? There's quite a few, aren't there?
Yeah, but what do you expect?
Well,
they want shields.
They love a shield. Do you want to move on to spoilers yet, or are you?
Yeah, let's move on to. I mean, so basically, for anyone who hasn't seen the film and doesn't want it spoiled, don't listen on beyond this point. If you have seen it, want to listen to discuss it in more detail, then listen on beyond this point. For those of you who are leaving us now, thank you very much for listening. We'll be back next year with our Star Wars special for Episode 8. Meanwhile, listen to all the other failed critics podcasts we do, and go and vote in our end of year awards.
The Failed Critics podcast is presented by Steve Norman and Owen Hughes, created by James Diamond, with original music provided by Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com, remixed by James Yule of JamesYule.com. You can find us at failedcritics.com, on Twitter at failedcritics, and Facebook at facebook.com/failedcritics. Thanks for listening.
Star Wars Rogue One spoilers. Probably the biggest one in terms of, not so much in terms of the storyline, the fact of Tarkin being in the CGI. I mean, the reveal was quite cool in so much it was Tarkin. The CGI was. It was obviously CGI, but how can you not be obviously CGI? Yeah. It was very good CGI.
But I couldn't
CGI.
Tell. So I'm so frustrated. I want to ask you, was it any good or not? I could see it was. I could see, you know, Peter Cushing's on the screen, but because of the fucking shitty picture quality in Eastbourne, it was half good.
I think with a lot of CGI, and it was very well done, and like you say, it was a real surprise. Because you see the back of his head, first of all, then he turns around and...
You see the back of his head and you think it's going to be like the end of Revenge of the Sith. It's going to be, right, that's Tarkin, but it's going to cut away now. It's going to be nothing.
But it looked good, but it felt a little bit wrong. But that's classic CG. It can always look good, but it's off. It feels just a little bit out.
Because nothing... I'm sure there were CGI aliens and whatever in it, but there was nothing because it's a human and because it's a dead guy and it's such a it didn't take me out of the film. And again, I said this in my written review, this didn't annoy me, whereas everything that CGI that George Lucas has gone back and put in annoys me. This didn't annoy me. And with his dialogue, did they just rehash it from what he had done from A New Hope?
No, because he didn't sound like him.
He sounded slightly off.
The guy from Holby City, one of the actors from Holby City, was involved with his, the Tarkin bit.
But listening to it, when I was watching it last night, part of me thought, oh, that sounds a bit like Fassbender. I wondered if they got him to do it, but it's not.
He got Fire When Ready in twice. So that was cut from A New Hope.
Okay. I just thought it was just seeing him on screen again. And I all I could think of was my sort of late father, who was a huge Peter Cushing fan. And I was thinking, my God, imagine if my dad was alive now and could see, you know, Peter Cushing has been brought back to life and put in a Star Wars film. He would not be able to get his head around that. I thought I loved it. I nearly lost my shit seeing it.
I think it worked.
He was in it a lot as well.
Yeah, he was. I think it worked.
And he is quite, as a bad guy, he does play it well. Dead or alive, whatever, CGI or real, he does play that well. He is intimidating. He has got that kind of look about him.
Totally.
And the other bit of kind of, well, not so much CGI, but the way they got Leia into the film.
I
didn't like her line in it. I didn't like what she spoke. But I thought the actual way they got her into the film, in terms of the way that it looked, it appeared, was absolutely fine. So it was really clever. But I didn't like the line. She just said,
What does this mean?
It was something like, what is, and, you know, and she got given the plans, like, what is this, or what's this for, what's this do? And she just said, hope. It's just a bit.
Didn't the word hope appear several dozen times throughout the entire film? I'm sure when it comes out on DVD, there's going to be a super cut of all the times the word hope is mentioned in Rogue One.
Yeah. But no, I thought it looked fine. I thought it was quite clever.
It happened so quickly, though.
Yeah, because you could see it from behind. You knew the end of the film. I didn't know she was going to appear, but you knew the film was leading up to. You saw it was the ship that she was on at the start of A New Hope. So you knew that that directly led one into the other. The film was very much ending as a new hope was starting. But I didn't expect. And then when she just saw her in her robes from the back, I just thought, that's what you're going to see of her. When it turned round and it's a young Carrie Fisher, you think, bloody hell, that's clever.
Shall we deal with the other kind of guest appearances and cameos? Obviously, Darth Vader.
Darth Vader, brilliant.
That lightsaber thing was near the end was awesome.
He was in two scenes. I'll tell you what, in the last scene he was in, right at the end, and you hear his breathing behind that door, I think, you know, how is he still menacing? I shouldn't find that intimidating and menacing. Because I'm a grown up. Fucking hell, just that noise, and not knowing, you know, knowing what's coming through that door. And then when he just goes through all those people.
That was good. Lightsabers going everywhere and using the force, choking people. Because you do forget just how threatening he was, not just as an audience, but within the universe itself.
And James Earl Jones' voice is perfect for it.
Well, he was sounding very old.
I think he was, but when, like, it's like when you go and see an old band and their voices are going a bit, but they're just playing all their old hits, you kind of tune it out.
But was it too little of Vader?
No, I think it was the right... Yeah. Because otherwise it becomes a Darth Vader film. If you have too much of him, it becomes a Darth Vader film. But I think just the two or three scenes he was in was enough.
Was there something off about his look as well? He looked a little bit too plasticky. Like, if you do watch A New Hope, he's very shiny and kind of sharp. And there was... I didn't think they did a perfect job. Was he? I take it he was CG'd rather than an actor playing.
No, they had a number of actors physically playing him, I think. I think it was obviously James Earl Jones doing the voice and a number of actors physically representing him. Not David Prowse, as he doesn't get on with George Lucas anymore.
And he's a very old man.
Yes, yeah, so didn't he think that it was going to actually be his voice when he had a thick Somerset accent?
We saw some other people pop up. We saw R2 and C-3PO. They were just in the hangar there on Yavin 4.
Which made perfect sense. That was lovely.
And Jimmy Smith popped up, Bail Organa.
Yeah.
Well, and Mon Mothma.
Because he says, I'm just off to Alderaan. And you're like, that's what that's going to work out for you, fella. And because he mentions about going to meet just a Jedi, which I think obviously is a reference to Obi-Wan.
Yeah, I think it's Mon Mothma says to him, oh, are you going to get in touch with you. Basically, you're going to get in touch with your Jedi friend. He's like, well, he served me well in the Clone Wars. We'll need him on board for this. So that must be why the Leia's ship was going over Tatooine anyway at the start of A New Hope. She must have been trying to get to him anyway, and then had to put the message in R2-D2 because they got boarded.
The other little Easter egg cameo from the original films was the guy that said, he doesn't like you. Yeah. I don't like you either. I can't remember his name, but the one that's wanted.
Ponda Baba and Dr. Evazan from the cantina.
Yeah, the guys.
That was enough. You know, it was enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. There was
one last one. Gold Leader and Red Leader from Episode 4 were in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was too much, but there was enough, and enough of them were subtle enough that it was only for kind of the fans.
It wasn't as nostalgia heavy as The Force Awakens, which was fine, obviously, but it wasn't as laid on as thick.
Yeah, none of it was forced, particularly like the prequels, like when Chewbacca turns up and Revenge of the Sith. It always seemed a bit too forced, but yeah, it was all very well done.
Well, when we're talking about spoilers for this, it was very brave to kill them all off.
No, because we knew they were all going to die. Because Mon Mothma says, she actually mentions that the number of Bothans that died. And I know they're not.
No, Bothans. That was Return of the Jedi.
Was it?
The second.
Oh,
Death
was that
Star.
The second one?
Yeah.
She wasn't in A New Hope.
Oh, I was just wait.
So that was. So no, we didn't. So all we knew was that they stole the plans. We didn't know what happened to them, and then they went and killed them all. You thought at least, you know, Jin and Cassian would somehow escape the planet.
Well,
no,
I was glad they all
just
died.
Killed them all off.
Well, so in my notes I've got here, glad everyone died. It really was.
You're such a liar.
No, because it was a really ballsy move. It's a Disney film.
Well, no, that's what I mean. I thought it was a good move. I thought it was. I just thought, wow, that's brave, because there's no way they're going to do anything else with these characters now. And it explains quite nicely why they weren't around in the original trilogy, because that's what everyone will ask. Oh, what are they doing when the original trilogy was going on? Nothing, they're dead.
And they even killed off Jin's dad midway through. Which I must confess, because I'd spent the previous few hours in the pub before the film, I'd actually nodded off during that scene, so I don't actually quite know what happened, but my mate nudged me away.
It does put to bed one fan theory that Rey is the daughter or granddaughter of Jin.
Oh, right, okay. I didn't even know that was a theory.
Yeah, it's one of these theories, because obviously Rey is obviously going to be somebody's daughter or granddaughter, and she was left behind on that planet at the start of The Force Awakens on Jakku. And there was a theory that, you know, obviously it's a big female heroine, so Jin is going to be her gran or her mum. Obviously not, because she's dead.
While we're in spoilers, what were your favourite scenes, because the one I want to touch upon is that hammerhead ship.
Yeah.
I love that. Just it ramming that huge Star Destroyer, firing up its engines and forcing it into the other one and watching it fall into that ship. I thought it just looked amazing.
I just think that whole final battle scene, from being on the planet to up in space as well, but also the planet you see first, and you've got that big fallen Jedi statue led on the ground. That's pretty cool.
But do you agree that this isn't really a standalone film, is it?
It is and it isn't, because the whole... It directly fits in to the other films, into the timeline. It's not going to be like this Han Solo spin-off that's coming, which won't fit directly into the timeline of the other films. It won't be like the Obi-Wan Kenobi proposed spin-off, the Boba Fett, but whatever other spin-off films they do. But the main thing about the Star Wars films, the 9 episodes will have, is that they are focused on the Skywalker family, and this film isn't at all.
I guess so.
And that's why it probably classes as a spin-off, because it's nothing about the Jedi and the Sith, and it's nothing about the Skywalker family or Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader. It is. You know, the Force is barely in it. If there's no Darth Vader in it in 2 scenes, the Force wouldn't be in it at all.
No, and there's not an awful lot of lightsaber action. There's not a lot of Force action. Because they mention it right at the start when she puts that necklace on her, and I thought, oh, no, please, not again. And there's very little comes back from that.
Well, Donnie Yen's character speaks a lot about the Force, and you think he may not be he isn't a Jedi, but he's kind of in tune with it. Because
he's blind and he can hit people with a stick.
He repeats that phrase exactly. Yes, yeah. But I'm still not convinced. I can't put my finger on why I wasn't blown away by it. I didn't like the first two acts. It got pretty entertaining in the third act. Good action, special effects, set pieces. But maybe I was just disappointed. Maybe I was expecting something else, because there were scenes in the first teaser trailer, or maybe the second teaser trailer, that weren't in the finished film, because there were a lot of reshoots, apparently, which is never a good sign. I got the impression from that second trailer that Jin was hired because she's a thief rather than because of her connection with her father. Maybe, do you think that was inserted later?
Possibly. It could have, to make a stronger sort of story arc and tie it all in. The thing about, I believe this film was made by the studio. I don't think, you know, the director's got his name on it, but I don't think he really had an awful lot of control. He's probably told what he had to do and went out and did it. But equally, I think, you know, Disney know what they're doing. And I think they've been quite brave with this one, because it's way darker than we were expecting.
The real test will be, or the real proof of how well they're doing will be with Episode 8, because while I loved The Force Awakens, it was a lot of fun. It was a good Star Wars film. It was a rehash of A New Hope with bits of the other films chucked in. If they do the same with Episode 8, I think it's not going to work. If they make it a complete, yeah, you know, standalone, not standalone, but if they make it completely original with a few callbacks like Rogue One was, it'll be fine.
Yeah, agreed. In fact, going back to The Force Awakens, when I did the podcast last year, I wasn't that impressed, but when I rewatched it in the January, I really thoroughly enjoyed it. So who knows, maybe a second viewing of Rogue One might put any problems to bed.
Yeah, I need, desperately want to see this again, where I can actually see the visuals, see the, yeah, you know, I want to see Moff Tarkin in all his glory. I just couldn't see it. It was so bright in there. It was so, the dark scenes were so awful. Cineworld are a fucking disgrace. They really are. They don't give a fuck about showing films. They just want to sell popcorn to morons.
Anyway, so yes, that is now it for this year's Star Wars special. We'll be back next year with the Episode 8 one, but obviously Failed Critics is out every week, although maybe not so much over the Christmas and New Year period, although we have got our Christmas special out now and an end of year special out soon. And in the meantime, go to the website and read lots of reviews, including my one of Rogue One.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.